Welcome to the Jazz Piano School Podcast, episode number 121. And I BS you not, this particular episode is absolutely amazing.
Welcome to the Jazz Piano School Podcast.
Learn jazz piano without all the guesswork.
Now, your host, Brendan Lowe.
Welcome to the Jazz Piano School Podcast, where we have one mission, that is to help as many interested people around the world learn and improve at jazz piano by providing structured and organized jazz piano information. I'm your host, as always, Brendan Lowe, and thank you for listening to episode number 121. This is going to be 7 ways to achieve an out or modern improv sound. All right, so this is going to be a real fun one. I'm super excited to dive into this. We've got a lot of requests out there for this kind of stuff, and I think people struggle with this, you know, trying to get that like out sound, or just trying to sound, you know, like hip, you know. I guess I don't really know how else to say it. It's kind of a cheesy way to say it, like, yeah, I want to sound hip, you know, quote air quotes there, right? But that's true, and I remember going through the same thing. So trust me when I say I'm there. I'm absolutely there with you. I felt the same thing when I was starting out. And again, if you guys know my story, like my first 15 years, even after college and things like that, I truly didn't feel like I had a sense of sounding like an actual jazz player. Again, I learned little tidbits here and there, but I didn't necessarily have a plan. But my playing just sounded like, I don't know, just boring, I guess, right? So we want to get that like cool sound that's like, oh, like it perks you up, it perks your ears up, you know, and I completely understand. So trust me, this should be a good one, and I've planned out my notes, and so I think it's really going to help you guys get what you're looking for. So I'm super excited. Jazz Piano School, you know, it's gone through a lot of changes, and we're working on the custom site, and not me personally, because I'm not a developer, you know, I'm a musician, but the person that I've hired to do that, they're doing a great job, and we're getting there slowly for sure. And obviously these things take a lot of time, you know, but our custom website, again, I have a vision, I have a plan, and trust me when I say this, I don't know why I keep saying that sentence, but I'm not going to give up. I'm not going to ever give up on Jazz Piano School, you know? So when I say something, it may take longer than, you know, I've alluded to, you know, in these podcasts or through emails or whatever, if you're on our email lists, right? But I will do it. Okay. You know, I'm a Will Smith kind of guy. I don't know if you guys have heard this, these quotes from Will Smith, but you know, he says, you know, no one's going to outwork him. Right? You may have more talent than him and you may have more skill, but when it comes to hard work, like this is all I do. I hope you guys realize this. I mean, I'm going to start doing more live videos, give you guys some insights into my office. Like, I don't live in a mansion, you know. I'm a musician. I play gigs, you know, to pay the bills, to feed me, you know. And so it's like JPS is great, but I gotta work. I work all day, every single day at running JPS, and I do want to help others. I love business, actually. I love freedom. I love passion. I'm very passionate about hard work and working towards your dream. You know, I'm a very creative person. Obviously, I think musicians, all of us know, we're very creative people, but we got to pay the bills. When I graduated from college, I had a plan I'm always about plans and structure. You know, that's me. That's how I approach education too. But I always have to have a plan. I had a plan in place to become a personal trainer and work in the gym industry because I loved fitness. I always loved sports and working out. So I got my personal training degree, and I did that for like 10 years, you know, but it's a corporate job. I mean, at least being a personal trainer, I got to move around. I wasn't sitting in an office all day like a lot of us are, and that's just terrible. I mean, eventually I did graduate. I did get promoted to become a manager. So I was managing personal training businesses in the gym, you know, so we were, you know, obviously responsible for getting personal training clients, like helping people. But I love that stuff because we were helping people change their lives. We're helping people grow in a new way, obviously feel good about themselves. That stuff was really great. But after I became a manager, you know, you can already imagine that stuff had so many more responsibilities to deal with that I just wasn't about, right? I was working 50 to 60 hour work weeks. I had quotas, I had goals, I was in an office, you know, it's just like completely different experience. And again, I was trapped by paying the bills. I don't know how I got onto this, but again, I'm about, so I love business and I want to help people free up their life to pursue their passion that, you know, whatever that may be. And obviously I'm going to be targeting musicians and artists. Like if you're a musician, you want to do music for life. I always wanted to do music for life, right? And so I'm now in a place that I can do that. And I perform and I gig and I love music. Like that's the only thing I wanted to do my entire life. It's just fantastic. And I love filming these podcasts or, you know, and educating others about helping them learn jazz piano. I mean, like what more could you ask for in life? It's just, it's incredible. So I want to help other people quit their day jobs and do that same thing and help them realize that music actually is possible. You just need to know how to really take hold of the different ways to tap into, you know, obviously you can't just perform. Like you can't just, I mean, unless you're Gerald Clayton, some of these huge jazz stars, like that's just not going to do it. So you need to tap into other ways of really kind of, you know, working at these income streams that you can maybe use different types of music. And when I mean income streams, I mean anything. Like I play for a church, I teach, I do so many different things to help pay the bills. Like it's not like, you know, it's not like I have an abundance of money and stuff like that. So I work hard at all these different types of income streams that all kind of come together that allow me the freedom to be sitting here and doing this. So I definitely want to help people realize that vision that you can be pursue your creative abilities, whatever that may be. And I've seen so many jazz piano students from JPS go on to do that. And it's just, it's an absolutely amazing thing. I love to see that. I love to help people change their lives. Obviously, I was trying to do that through personal training, but it didn't really fit for me. And again, I moved into this. And obviously, I really believe in jazz piano and just music in general. Music, you know, helping people grow through music and change their lives through music. Music has extraordinary powers. It has healing powers. It has just so much potential to create happiness within someone's life, right? When you're down, you're feeling sad, you put on music, it's an immediate boost. Like it can completely change your state, right? If you've listened to any Tony Robbins stuff like that, I'm very motivational. I love staying happy and like positive and productive. And if you've listened to that, it's all about your state of mind. Like if you put on a song, it can completely change your body language, your mood. You're like, oh, okay, I can do this, right? It gives you power, fulfillment inside. And so music is just the greatest investment ever. And I knew when I started jazz piano school, helping people grow and fulfill their dreams of actually self-expressing, you know, their soul through jazz piano is the greatest service I could give back to the world, you know, to give back to everybody. So here we are, right? So jazz piano school is going through a lot. I don't know how I got started off on that. I feel good. I've been being very productive. It always feels good to be productive. And, you know, I'm halfway through filming the singer accompany course. I got off my butt finally. It was just dragging and dragging. We all know how that is, but you know, like I said, if I said I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it. It may take some time. It may be later than I said, but I will do it. Okay. I will always finish whatever I say I'm going to finish. So the website's coming along. I'm filming the singer accompany course. Hopefully that's going to be released. What month are we in? Definitely by the end of June. That's a long shot. I'm pushing for end of May, right? But definitely by the end of the June, we will have a specialty course on how to accompany a singer. And I'm going to do a lot of podcasts on the different types of strategies and methods I teach. It's just, oh, I love it. I love it. There's so many different awesome things in there that you just won't find anywhere else in the jazz education world. I mean, this is Brendan Lowe education right here. These strategies, honestly, it's just, I love it. And if you can take this, and I'm not saying it's easy by any means, but you have the information. If you can practice this and put it to use, oh my God, your playing is just going to skyrocket and you're going to be so much happier because of it. So that's coming out. We're moving. I'm doing a little test where I'm going to move all the information on the website to kind of a teaching platform. And I know there's a lot out there. I just haven't been thrilled with a lot of them. There's Kajabi, there's Teachable. There's all these different types of teaching platforms, but they've never allowed for exactly my vision of what jazz piano school should be and what I want it to be. And obviously that's why the custom site is being built. But again, that's going to take time. I'm kind of sick of the way the website's running. I want people to search. I want people to have a great user experience, moving through the material, accessing the material, having downloads, having audio tracks. Like, I want it to be awesome, right? And it's just difficult with the way that plugins work these days with WordPress. There's all these different type of, you know, plugins and integrations. And like, you have like six different tools that you all need to talk to each other and work cohesively. You know, it's just, oh man, it's a pain in the butt. I'm not going to lie. So if you are a business owner and you're working with a website and you're using WordPress, trust me, I feel you. Okay. Even like a musician just trying to put a website up is difficult in general. I mean, these days they're making it very, very easy to do this with all these Wix and the GoDaddy builder and stuff like that. But still, like, you want to put more things into it. How do you do that? Then, yeah, I'm on fire today. Sorry about that, guys. But so let me see. Yes. So the Singer course, and then we are going to be moving the content. So for all the members out there listening right now, I'm going to send out an email about that. And so I think it will be really beneficial to everybody out there who is a member to access the content, move through the main course. And speaking of the main course, I just want to do a little sponsorship before we get started. So with that being said, let's dive into that. This podcast is brought to you by our Jazz Piano School main course curriculum. If you're brand new to jazz, or you've taken jazz lessons on and off, but you just never felt like you made much progress, or you just felt like the information was disorganized, unstructured, and frankly just impossible to actually implement, then our main course curriculum is absolutely perfect for you. Our 48-lesson, 600-video curriculum is meticulously planned out to deliver an easy, clear, step-by-step plan and roadmap. Whether you're a brand new student interested in jazz piano with absolutely no prior knowledge, or even a student with 1 to 15 years of lessons under their belt, our main course curriculum will fit all of your needs. The curriculum is structured and based off of proven language learning blocks, meaning you are learning bite-sized bits of information in four main categories that all relate to one topic. For example, you will start by learning and understanding a jazz piano theory tool, then work on technique for that specific theory tool you just learned, then focus on improvisation of the theory tool, then finally implement that tool into any and all types of jazz standard repertoire. This allows us to teach you complete freedom in your jazz piano playing in a short amount of time with a structured and organized process, thus making you a very, very happy and fulfilled person for the rest of your life. The main course curriculum will allow newbies to sit down and play jazz standards with a rich, lush sound while also preparing them for more advanced voicings, improvisation, and group playing if interested. The course will allow a more experienced player who is struggling to make progress break through their plateaus, fill in the holes that are holding them back, and finally allow them to achieve self-expression through jazz piano freedom. The course is completely sequential, meaning all the topics covered in the beginner, intermediate, and advanced levels are perfectly placed in order so that you're always comfortable and ready when moving to the next step, instead of feeling overwhelmed and frustrated because you just don't know how the information applies. The topics in the main course cover all necessary aspects of jazz piano, including, but not limited to, beginner improv fundamentals, triads, all seventh chord structures, rootless voicings, two-hand voicings, bebop improvisation, modern improvisation, reharm techniques, solo piano, group playing, styles, fourth voicings, extensions, hexatonic and pentatonic patterns, tune analysis, hundreds of theory and improvisation concepts, and much, much more. If you've ever felt frustration, stress, overwhelm, or you've just simply had an I can't do this type of attitude, then trust me when I say this, the Jazz Piano School main course curriculum will quickly alleviate all of those feelings so you can finally start feeling happy and fulfilled by this wonderful method of self-expression that is playing jazz piano. For more information and a free video masterclass on the concepts, tools, and education process contained within the course that you can actually start implementing today to see progress, go to jazzpianoschool.com/ultimate roadmap. All right, fantastic. So with that being said, let's dive right into the information. This is going to be the 7 ways to achieve an out or modern improv sound. So this is going to be absolutely fantastic. I love this. So diving right in. Number one, McCoy, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but he very, you know, he put the sus sound. And what I mean by sus sound is basically the four in the chord for a dominant chord, for example. So if I have a F7 chord, right, moving the third to the four, this is called a sus chord, a sus sound, basically a sus seventh chord. And basically he really adopted this voicing and made it just, he put it into jazz. And I mean, I'm sure other people were doing it as well, but he just kind of really popularized it. So the number one way you can actually start to achieve more of a modern type of sound is by using this. And you'll hear all the players, like all the modern players, Aaron Goldberg, I would say he's half, Chick, Keith has, but McCoy definitely, Joey Calderazzo, oh my God, his name is forgetting me. I'm having a moment here. The guy who played with, Winton, Kenny Kirkland, and, these types of guys, right, with their sound, always using sus chords. So when you are, when you have dominant chords and tunes, and granted, it's hard if you have like a tune like, I don't know, All of Me, right? That's an old-fashioned tune. So if I'm putting a sus chord in, if I'm playing certain types of sus voicings, like that, it's going to sound strange, right? So you kind of have to have a certain style of writing if you're playing originals or something like that, or some sort of more modern tune to actually do this. Now, I'm not saying you can't do that with, different tunes like All of Me or these old standards, but it's going to might sound out of place a little bit. But if you want to create an arrangement of it, go for it. But the first thing is to create a sus sound out of dominant voicing. So anytime you have more of a dominant chord, for example, an F7, we're going to make that a sus chord. Okay, so we're going to move the 3 to the 4. This right here, right, this creates a modern sound. It's more floaty, right, because there's this, I wouldn't say tension, but it's like unresolved color here, right? So if I were to play a blues, for example, and I turn my blues into all sus chords, right, if I don't use a single dominant chord, check out how it's going to sound, okay? One, now I'm just going to comp through it. One, two, oh, one, two, three, four. I mean, that's completely different than the way a blues actually, the traditional way of playing a blues. So that's creating sus sound with all dominant chords. So the first way you can actually start to do this sound is make dominant chords sus chords, right? Just take the third, move it up to a four. Okay, and all these different techniques that I'm, these different types of voicings that I'm playing, basically the way you can kind of tweak your mind really, really quickly, this is an instant hack to play a sus chord, right? You can take your F, your dominant chord, and then simply play a minor chord over top of it. So what minor chord do we play? We're going to play the relative 2 minor to that dominant chord. So again, if you want a quick way to think about this, you can take your dominant chord, play a minor chord that's up a fifth from that, or you can think about it as down a fourth. So I'm playing a C minor rootless voicing over an F chord. This creates a sus sound, and you can do this in all different types of ways. If you know your fourth voicings for your C minor, you can play a C minor fourth voicing over an F in the bass, and that creates your sus sound. I mean, that's more type of fourth movement I'm not going to get into, but just playing these types of this C minor, your two sets of fourth voicings right here will create a sus sound over that F. Now, the same thing, when I moved to my B flat, I did add some reharms in there. I added my B sus movement into my B flat, and the way I was able to do that is because I took a tritone, a dominant tritone, and I just made it a sus. And then moved it down into my B flat sus. So now I'm playing an F minor rootless voicing here over B flat. Right? Cool, huh? And then I think I threw in something like this. This is a F minor rootless with the 11 in there. Okay, really nice way to do this. I love that voicing there. Octave in the B flat. Now what else did I play? all these half step walk downs are usually dominant chords, right? In a blues, you just make them all sus. I slid into the two chord, you know, the two sus with the tritone sub for a D7 chord. So a D7, right? A tritone of D7 is A7. So I made the A7 a sus. Slid down into the G sus, C sus. And then I don't really remember what I did after that, but that is your sus sound, okay? That's how you can quickly and easily create a sus sound. Just think about the minor over top of it, okay? So that's number one. That's going to immediately, in all tunes you play, creating that sus sound from a dominant chord is immediately going to make your sound more modern and less old school, right? Less traditional. So the second one is going to be if you're more, if you're soloing, right? If you're improvising in a group or even by yourself, you're playing solo piano, is fourth voicings, okay? I guess I'll stick with the blues. Well, I'll do a couple things. But if you're using fourths in your left hand, this is immediately going to create a modern sound. The fourth voicing is a modern sound. That's what it is. That's what it does. It creates an atmosphere and effect of a modern sound. So if you're soloing over a blues, for example, right? And you play a fourth voicing, a fourth sus voicing. Remember, we want to still create a sus sound over the chords, okay? So here's a very nice sus sound with a fourth voicing. And again, most of the time your fourth voicings will give you sus sounds, right? Now, during your fourth voicings, like if you know some movement, they might not always be perfect fourth. So for example, here, this is not a perfect fourth, right? We have a perfect fourth here, but not here, okay? But that's okay. Any sort of fourth is no problem. That will make your sound good. So again, if you're soloing, again, I mean, I'll get into it in a second, but your fourth voicing. So how do we play fourth voicings for your three major chords, and not major, music major, your three general seventh chords. Okay, that was a stupid pun. But anyway, so your minor seventh chord, right? What you can do, if you have a C minor seventh chord, root, fourth. Now, you're not playing the third in there, right? If you're playing your fourth voicing, but look what happens if I move up my scale. I'm just moving up diatonically in fourths. So this is how you can create movement with your fourths. So if you take your C Dorian scale, man, this episode is good. I'm feeling it today. Right? You take your C Dorian scale, you create a fourth voicing from that, and you simply move up your Dorian scale, playing all notes from the Dorian scale. See this? Fantastic, isn't it? So any sort of minor modal tune that you're going to be playing, you can adopt this strategy to solo over, right? Same stuff there. So obviously you can hear the sound of my fourth voicing. I'm going to get into my right hand lines in a second, don't worry. But they really go hand in hand, okay? So many people think, oh, when you want to get a modern sound, you automatically go to your right hand first, which is, it's understandable. I did the same thing. But in order to get the essence of the modern sound, your left hand is extremely, extremely important. McCoy's left hand was doing so much stuff, like, you know, moving around, moving into different keys, and I'm going to talk about that in a second. But without that left hand, like if you're playing traditional rootless voicings, like if I'm playing a rootless voicing, if I play this is not going to necessarily give you a modern sound. Like, you got to throw some extensions in there, some fourths. That's going to give you the modern sound, not these traditional types of rootless voicings, movements, right? That's more for bebop, stuff like that, and kind of, you know, a hybrid of bebop and jazz and things like that. But so fourth voicing. So for your minor, that's what you can do. Very cool thing. Now, the cool thing here is that for your minor seventh chords and your dominant seventh chords, you can use the same movements. You ready for that? Did you think I left? So you can use the same movement. So for an F7 chord, remember, any time you have a dominant chord, you can take any sort of voicing from the minor, a fifth above, right? Your relative to minor, and you can use that voicing to create a sus sound. So before, we were playing C minor fourth voicings, right? Moving up. Now, if I have an F7 chord, I can take the same sequence of chords and use them to play over my F7, right? So I'm thinking C minor, well, not personally, but you can think C minor, right? Let me use my right hand so you can hear the sound. Doesn't that sound fantastic? Like, that's a modern sound immediately. So if you're playing some sort of modern original, or you're playing, you know, Wayne Shorter tune, or any sort of more progressive tune or jazz standard, take your any dominant chords, again, any minor chords, use your fourth voicings, any dominant chords, use the fourth voicings relative to that dominant chord, right? A minor above, right? So here's my F. You know, whatever. So that's going to give you the sound. Okay, that's number two, fourth voicings. Number three, all right, hexatonic patterns are in JPS main course curriculum. You heard all about that in the sponsorship, but I'm going to give you one today because there's lots of hexatonic patterns. And patterns, if you talk to a sax player, they'll give you days and days of patterns to play. Okay, not in a bad way. I'm just saying, like, it's cliche thing. Like, sax players are always practicing patterns, right? Because of Coltrane, just like blowing their brains out. It's kind of funny, but very useful, very very useful. I'm not making fun of it, but it's just funny because you always hear them practicing patterns, right? Hexatonic pattern is basically hexatonic scale in general is two triads put together. So again, McCoy, very, very famous for this. If you take a hexatonic triad, excuse me, if you take two triads, so if we take our major triad and our flat seven major triad and we put those together and we create a scale, that's basically what we get. So there's two ways to do this. If I use these notes over my left hand voicings, let's say for the key of F, right? So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, right? Hexa, 6, okay? I have this certain type of sound. So basically, the way you can think about it is you're leaving out the 6. You're just not playing the 6. Don't play the 6 at all. Don't play that note. You hear the sound that's creating? There's no bebop approaches, right? No bebop approaches. So we're not using half steps. We're just using these movements with these 6 notes. That's going to give you an hexatonic, that's going to give you a modern sound, right? Okay. Did you hear that? I mean, that's completely different than me going, you know, it's completely different, right? There's no approaches. It's actually, some would argue it's easier. And you hear so many modern players and like, or people will start using the pentatonic scale, hexatonic scales super early on in their jazz piano education career. Or learning process, I should say, because it's easy. But, you know, I have a problem with that because you're learning these advanced modern sounds without actually learning bebop language in the process of actually improvisation. You just have these 6 notes, which isn't a bad thing necessarily. But again, when it comes to playing bebop, that's a completely different language. And if you're playing an old jazz standard and you start playing like this, people are going to be like, what the heck? You know, it just doesn't fit. It doesn't fit. Okay. So, the first way that I was talking to you about is using these 6 notes, right, to create your modern sound. So that's absolutely what you can do. The more targeted way of doing this, that's more for beginners, but what McCoy does and a lot of people do as well, what I was talking about the saxophone players, is that you take your triads and you're creating different triadic patterns out of these two triads. You hear what's happening? So a really good way to kind of demonstrate this is to go up the scale with inversions. Right, I can come down. Woo, flubbing a lot of notes here. Right, and then we can start to do things like this. Right, and then move up in different types of movements. So I can go, I start on the third here, I can go. And then I could do. So all these different types of patterns, I mean, guys, it's endless. It's absolutely endless. So I have so many different types of patterns I put into JPS, you know, for the members and things like that, that they can get a hold of. But again, it takes you down this rabbit hole. It's just like there's so many different types of patterns. What I'd recommend to you is just think about the two triads separately, right? So think about these two triads as F major triad and E flat. So when you go to play a line, you're basically going to play a four-note pattern. So you want to play four notes out of the triad, because then it'll even up your line to begin with, instead of going... That would be more of a triplet feel. Triplet, triplet. If we're playing an eighth note line, excuse me, we want to, unless you want to displace it, right? That's very, very advanced, right? If you're playing... That's a displaced rhythmic figure, because you have a triad of three, but you're playing a grouping of four, so you start your E flat on the fourth eighth note, right? I'm not going to get into that right now, but you could do that if you're a more advanced player listening to this. But again, play four notes within the triad, and then go to your next triad. So it would be E flat, wherever it is. And you can, I would take the notes, I wouldn't jump. Like, I wouldn't necessarily jump. You can do that. Try and stick to the surrounding notes in the next triad. You see what's happening? So you can jump within the triad. So I could go. So I went down, or I could jump back up here. I could do that. Right? So wherever you leave off in that triad, whatever that fourth note is, sorry. Wherever that fourth note is, then you jump to the closest chord tone, right? Sorry. That's an example, okay? So that's how you would use that. And again, I don't like all triadic improvisation. Because it sounds very stiff to me. Like, I mean, I love it. Don't get me wrong. I love it personally, though. This is my own personal self-expression. I like combining both. So I'll definitely use more of a scalar approach combined with the triadic approach. This is just my personal self-expression of my soul through music. Okay, it's not saying anything else. So I'll use some triads sometimes. Like, you can definitely hear the triaded movement when you start doing it. And then so many people will just move up and down with patterns. It sounds like an exercise to me, right? Like, people will play that as an improvisational line, and it's, I don't know, it's not really a line to me. It's just like an exercise, right? So I want to spontaneously create music through my soul without regurgitating my practice, is basically what I'm trying to say. If it comes out naturally, then fine. But like, if I move past an octave, that's not really probably what my soul wants to play, if you get my drift. Okay. Anyway, that's number three. All right. It's hexatonic triads. Number four is going to be pentatonic patterns. Okay. So your pentatonic scale, right? We have five notes now instead of six. Okay. Here's my C minor pentatonic. Now, what do we do is we do the same thing we did with our hexatonic triad, is we create four note patterns out of our pentatonic pattern. Because this is a five-note scale, penta, right, five notes, if we were to play a five-note pattern, it doesn't fit equally with a 4-4 tune, right, if we're playing eighth notes, okay? So we condense our pattern into four notes. Right, same thing coming down if you're coming down. So the pentatonic pattern, so many people, guitar players, I think it's easy on guitar to do that, play these pentatonic patterns. You hear these pentatonic movements all the time, right? With your major pentatonic as well, right? So many people use this, that kind of lick where you're just going up and down the pentatonic patterns. It's not really my bag, you know? But again, the way to use your pentatonic patterns is going to be through mixing of movements and the way you do it. So, for example, you don't always have to go 1, 2, 3, 4, right? You can go 1, 3, 2, 4, right? So the numbers equate to the way the movement, right? That would be a pattern. Let me see. You know, that would be a pattern. There's hundreds of different patterns. Let me see. There it is. You know, and again, it just goes on and on and on. And again, you can practice your patterns to infinity, right? But the way you want to actually apply these things is I would, again, take these notes, think about the patterns in groups of four. And if you go down, you want to make a grouping of four. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 1. And it can be anything, really. You just want to kind of break it up. And this is how you can start to get into it slowly to get some sort of modern sound. You know, and again, just make sure you're moving back and forth and it's going to sound fantastic, right? If you do want to dive into more of the structured organization of learning pentatonics, you can definitely start to practice your numbers and your patterns. And again, that can take you into a whole huge deep rabbit hole of movements and patterns if you're going through all the keys. I mean, goodness, it can take years, you know what I'm saying? But again, to just try to achieve this, again, as you notice, I'm hitting the F not intentionally, but just because I like it in there. That's habitual. I love this sound. This is basically more of a kind of a scale I use. Not really a scale, but just a sound. This right here. There's probably a name for it. You have a lot of fun with this kind of stuff. So again, the pentatonic scale can also work differently over different types of chords. And again, this is such a huge deep rabbit hole too. If I take a major G major pentatonic scale and I play it over F, right? This right here is creating a sharp 11 sound. So basically, I'm playing a sharp an F7 sharp 11 sound, but based on pentatonics. And again, if I leave that E out, obviously you don't want to play the E because you're playing over a dominant chord, but you can take this pattern of four notes, create kind of sort of a pentatonic scale out of it. You know, stuff like that, and have a really nice sound there, right? So, and again, if you're doing, if you're playing over an F major 7 chord, then you could add that E in there, right? That would give you your full pentatonic scale to actually move back and forth. That's more the traditional way to do it. I don't know why I started with the dominant chord, but you know, people will tell you to play your two major pentatonic scale over an F, so one step below. You know, that's the sound it's going to create there, right? So that's your F major 7 sharp 11 pentatonic scale. So again, as you start to shift and move, right, your pentatonic scales, you know, over different chords, right, these types of sounds, you can actually just experiment. Right, this will give you more of a sus sound. This is going to be definitely different. Right, if I'm playing an F7 dominant, this is going to be sharp 11, flat 13, flat 7, flat 9, sharp 9. Right, think about that for a second. Obviously, you'd have to match your sound with your voicing, right? That's going to be pretty out, right? So you can start to play around with it. Again, there's so many different ones. This one's really nice. And again, I wouldn't. You can experiment. You can. This is where you can really start to explore. So I should talk about that in a way right now. So anyway, going into these different types of movements, right? You can obviously move around your pentatonic scale. This applies to hexatonic scale as well to create different atmospheres and sounds based on the pentatonic scale that you're playing. Now, movements, pentatonic movements and patterns, you don't have to move up here. You can shift. So many different sounds are created by shifting your pentatonic scale. So what do I mean by that? You'll hear Coltrane excuse me, play different patterns, right? I'm sure you've heard this before, right? Some that type of pattern. So that's a movement of just a four note major pentatonic scale going up by minor thirds. And that's a very, very common pattern that you hear a lot, is a minor third movement. Basically going up diminished, right? So I'm playing my major pentatonic on all of these, starting on all these keys. Right? Another one you might hear is this is the same over all three of these, right? So I'm going, so basically I'm playing, this is more for a hexatonic pattern, right? There's my F, there's my A flat, there's my B, there's my D. Right, and you can come down. Right, and again, you all these. There's so many different types of movements. I mean, right. This is going down into my F. Let me see. This is for my G. Right, A. So you can go up and down in half steps. There's so many different types of movements, and again, you'll hear these players. So they'll be playing one pentatonic scale, and then. And then move into different keys by shifting the intervals that they're playing in, right? And this is all happening within the pattern. So they might go F, A flat, B, right? And then resolve back to the F, right? McCoy was doing this a lot, shifting his fourth voicing, right? He might move down by a half step, move into E. You know, so he's shifting around. And again, there's so many different types of movements. Right, this is a common one. Right. So you're going whole step, half step, whole step, half step, right? It's just endless. And again, I can't even, I'm at 40 minutes here. I can't even get into all the logistics of this. But that is number four. That's pentatonic patterns. You can move around, play around with it, explore, have a ball. Okay, I'm sure you'll get into a lot of great stuff. You can spend years on this. Okay, number five is going to be three. These are going to be some great beginner skills that definitely need require attention. The altered scale, okay, is getting lots of extensions. So if I were to play a C altered scale, this is going to be flat 9, sharp 9. Your natural third, sharp 11, flat 13, flat 7, and 1. So over dominant chords, it's a very easy and quick way to get some sort of movement extensions in your playing and get your out sound. Again, you need to be careful with your left hand if you're playing a C rootless voicing. This is going to sound kind of strange. I would play your altered voicing, right? It's going to fit your altered scale, right? Who would have thought? Okay. Immediately in a 2-5-1, you can play the notes however you want, any sort of pattern. It doesn't, you can play whatever pattern you want. It doesn't matter. You can move up in scale, you know, however you want to play. It's completely up to you. So that's the altered scale. One of my students one time taught or thought about the Aughtred scale as a half step up, minor, major, no, excuse me, melodic, minor scale. So if you think these are, I mean, you can get crazy with all these different ways to think about things, but if you want an easy way to try and play a C altered scale, you play a D flat melodic minor. Yes, melodic minor. Yeah. Melodic minor scale starting on C, right? So I'm playing D flat melodic minor, right? Minor third, major seven. Okay, so I just start that on C. So any scale you want, if you wanted to play a G altered scale, you would think A flat melodic minor. So A flat minor, there's my minor, right? And then I'm at G. So that's my altered scale, right? It's a cool thing because for like F sharp, for example, I'm playing G melodic minor, which is almost all white notes, right? Very easy scale to play. So like a G sharp, a G flat altered scale, you'd be like, oh, how do I play this? Be like, oh, G, excuse me, melodic minor, right? And again, a cool thing about our altered voicing, guys, a little trick here is that if you think about the tritone rootless voicing, you're going to get an altered chord. So what do I mean by that? If a tritone of C is F sharp, I'm playing my F sharp rootless voicing. That's giving me an altered sound over the C, right? So I'm thinking, not necessarily, but again, you can think F sharp, you can think, sorry, I thought someone was knocking at my door. You can think G flat, rootless voicing, right? And that's going to give you your altered sound. So again, for some of the difficult keys that you're not used to playing in, take your tritone, right? So I can think either of the D rootless voicings. That's going to give me my A flat altered sound, right? So here's my A flat altered sound. And again, I would think A minor melodic minor. You follow me? Right, to get my melodic minor sound. Again, for G flat, okay, I'm going to think the tritone. So I'm going to think B, right? I can play this. I'm sorry, tritone is C. There we go. So I can think C7. That's going to give me my altered sound, right? So I can play this. And again, my melodic minor, G melodic minor. So that's a quick, easy, like, get around for changing keys quickly if you need to, like, you know, a good way to kind of learn it and ingrain it. So your half hole, where are we at here? Man, I got to make sure I don't run on a bad camera here. We got 14 minutes left. This is a long one. All right, so we got half hole. I got to wrap it up. Half, whole step, half step, whole step, half step, whole step, half step, whole step. So what does this give you? Flat 9, sharp 9, natural 3rd, sharp 11, natural 5, natural 13, which is a really nice difference from the altered, flat 7, and 1. I love this scale. Okay? Love that scale. Love it. Such a cool sound, right? My voicing I'm using over here, we want to reflect the extensions of the scale. So again, you can use any sort of sharp 11 voicing. You can use your altered voicing. You can use a flat 9 voicing. You can throw your, I love this voicing, natural 13 with flat 9. Man, I love that. Whew, gets me going. I love it. So this is, I love this voicing here. You got the half step and then the flat 9. I love this voicing as well. This is amazing. God, there's so much great content in here. So this is an amazing voicing. Oh, so many people play the flat 13 with your altered voicing, which is amazing too. That natural 13 gives such a clash and a rub if you want a really, really out sound. Like, listen to that. I mean, I love that line. I should write a tune off that. You can play all these repetitive patterns that I was just playing. It sounds like It sounds like, what's that album off of Black Codes? That track off Black Codes. I forget what it's called. Anyway, there's this one Winton tune that he wrote off Black Codes. It kind of sounds like, I think maybe Chambers of Tain. Anyway, that's your half whole. Your whole half, okay, is more commonly known as your diminished scale. Whole, half step, whole step, half step, whole step, half step, whole step, half step. I love using this whole half over, I think this is a Kenny Kirkland thing, over a minor chord. So again, you're going to be like, what? over a C minor chord, you can play C minor major, or you can play with the 13 in here. You have this basically flat 5 in the chord, so it's like a half diminished sound with a major 7, right? So you got your diminished triad, and then you have your major sound here. Such an amazing sound. So over C minor. Love that sound. Love that sound. So you can do either or. What was I playing? Yeah, sometimes I'll throw the natural 13 there in there as well. Such a cool sound to use. And again, just for a diminished chord, like if you're soloing, you should always know your whole halves for all your diminished chords. Right? Starting on all the keys. So on and so forth. It's symmetrical. So once you know one, you'll know four of them, right? And then you just got to move up 2 half steps. Practicing, you know, C sharp, same thing. Where are we? D diminished, F. See what I'm saying? So that is number 5. We got altered, half whole, and whole half. I got 10 minutes left. We got number 6 is going to be extensions of any kind reflected in your right hand. So if you're playing any sort of voice, you need to think about your voicings as not just, you know, they are something too. Like you need to put both of your hands together in a unanimous way so they're working parts. Like you should think about them as 2 different gears, right? So if you have this, if you're playing a C7 voicing, yes, and you have like this, right? Your right hand should want to reflect those notes because your left hands are bringing out those colors in your voicing. Now, there's no right or wrong way to do this. Like, I'll just play the notes, right, based on, and then any of the other notes I'm not playing, like the A natural, I can throw in there. And then I'll put the other notes from the chord tones in there as well, right? C, E, G, B flat, right? I could skip the third there. Oh, I'm not playing that E flat, but that's okay. Sorry, I was having a little fun. So reflect the extensions that you're playing in your left hand. Again, if you're playing something like this, sharp 11, natural 13, sharp 9. Woo! I love this. I actually don't use this much, but I should. I should practice this today. I love the sound of the natural. It gives sort of a sharp, this mystical feel, right? Listen to this. This would be a cool palette, and then you have a horn come in, you know, just saying, you know, you could have a trumpet up there or something as the main melody, and then you're creating this palette. That's out. So, always reflect the extensions in your left, in your right hand that your left hand is playing and vice versa, okay? Number 7, the final one, reharms. Reharms are so great to get some sort of modern sound. And anytime you use a reharm, you need to know your reharms, obviously. I'm not going to go over them in this one because there's lots of podcasts on reharms. But when you solo over reharms, it's going to give you an out sound, right? So if I'm soloing over the blues and I solo over my tritone sus reharm... Whoops, sorry. Yeah, no, B. And then I shift back into my B flat. know, so as you're playing reharms, right, you want to solo over the reharms. So I would probably figure out the reharms first. If you solo over your 2-5 to the 4, right? Even in bebop lines, it's going to sound a little bit more out. What am I trying to play here? There it is. That's a very good teaching point. Like, if you hear something and it's not coming out right, just stop and just, you know, go for it. I'll even do this on gigs. If I don't play something, I'll be like, screw it. I'm just going to keep trying until I get it right. So again, reharms. Like, I'm dropping down by half steps. And again, your sus is a reharm, right? All these different types of reharms. You're soloing over these reharms, right? Your 2-5, sus. You could go, right, if you solo over that reharm. So any type of reharms you start to get into, you want to solo over, right? You want to solo over them and use them in your right hand to reflect the reharm. And that's going to help the reharm come out so much more, obviously, during your improvisation, help that out sound come out so much more as well. So hope you guys enjoyed that. There was so much information there. I'm tempted to make this a lead magnet, even though we were going to kind of switch up stuff with the lead magnets. But I think we, let me see here, sus sound, fourth voicings. I will put this into a lead magnet. Okay, so if you guys go to jazzpianoschool.com/podcast121, you can download the examples for what I've played today. Not full examples, but obviously I'll demonstrate the sus sound, the fourth voicings, hexatonic. So you guys have that in a lead sheet of notation, because there's so much content in this one. And I hope you guys enjoyed that. Again, thank you so much for listening. I think that was a great episode. A lot of people had recommended this type of episode, so I hope that helped you guys. And I will see you in the next one. And as always, have a fantastic day and happy practicing.